Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Euskaltel 2018 Annual Results Investor Call. The management of Euskaltel will run you through the presentation materials that can be found at Euskaltel website, which will be followed by a Q&A session. You can send your question through the webcast platform at any time during the presentation. I am now pleased to introduce Mr. Francisco Arteche, CEO of Euskaltel. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Good morning to those joining from the U.S., and welcome to the presentation of our 2018 results. I'm Francisco Arteche, CEO of Euskaltel, and I'm here together with our CFO, Jonander de las Fuentes, as well as Aitor Marcaida, our CCO, Chief Communication Officer. Today, we will walk you through the key highlights of the year 2018, after which I will explain our operating performance, and Jonander will summarize the financial results. Following those remarks, we'll host a Q&A question. Let me now start with the presentation on page three. I would like to start highlighting that the results of this year reflect the good perspectives of Euskaltel in the times to come. During the year 2018, Euskaltel has been able to grow in net adds in the full year and in three out of four quarters, showing also significant strength in Q4. It's proof of the strong customer loyalty in a particularly competitive scenario. All in, our residential fixed subscriber base during the year has gone back to growth. Our expansion plan is evolving as expected and ready to ramp up during 2019 and beyond. We will cover that later in more detail. With regards to B2B, we managed to stabilize the evolution of the revenue, reversing a trend of years. In line with our expectations, the revenue in SMEs and large accounts has boosted, growing by 3.5%, thanks to the new customers gained in SMEs as a result of the relaunch of indirect channel, and also the widened portfolio in large accounts. I think more importantly, we have a promising pipeline for the future. We're working hard to change the trend in SOHO, implementing the appropriate measures, both in offer and in commercial approach, and we're confident that we will see the results of this new strategy during the first half of 2019. As to EBITDA margin, in the year, we reached 48.6% margin, growing by 42 basis points versus last year, which fulfills the guidance we had for the year. Some examples of the main efficiencies achieved during the year have been the backbone unification, the unification of the self-care and self-services of the three brands, the application of the best practices regarding contact centers, which has allowed us to optimize the service by reducing the number of calls to the contact center, but also the renegotiation and the unification of contracts with suppliers. All in, and despite the expected increase in CapEx related to our expansion and integration plans, we have been able to generate 124 million euros of free cash flow during the year, which means a growth above 24% versus last year and represents almost 18% of revenue and 9.5% of equity. Both our EBITDA margin and our free cash flow generation are today a reference in the industry, both at Spanish and European level. Net income continued showing a strong behavior and grew year-on-year by more than 26%, reaching an earning per share of 0.35 in the year. During the year, we continued with our sustainable shareholder remuneration. We distributed a total amount of 49.6 million euros as dividends, which is 0.278 per share. For 2019, we're today announcing a total dividend of 0.31 per share, of which 14 were already paid last February 7th as interim dividend. A complementary dividend of 0.17 is subject to approval by the AGM that will take place next April 1st. All in, this payment will mean an increase of more than 10% versus the previous year. If we move to page four, Let me now summarize our mission financial figures and the KPIs of the year. Regarding financial data, I will refer to statutory data in the slide, since the Telecable numbers were not included in our accounts until August 2017. And for the comparative purposes, I will refer to pro forma data in this slide and during the rest of the presentation. Our total revenue grew by 11.2% in the year, up to 692 million euros. Our EBITDA in the period reached 336 million euros, growing by 9.6% year on year, which implies the above mentioned margin of 48.6%. Our operating cash flow amounted to 183 million euros, standing at 26.4% of revenue. I think it's important to consider that if we were to consider the operating cash flow obtained from our underlying operations, that is excluding our expansion and integration plan, we should highlight that we stood at 31.8% of revenue in line with last year. And then net income grew in the period by 26.6% up to 62.8 million euros. The residential KPIs as of December 2018 were as follows. The fixed subscribers are growing and changing the 2017 declining trend where we lost 21,000 customers. We usually focus on broadband customers, but I think it's also important to call out that during the same period, mobile customers grew by 20,500, up to 550,000 customers, which is a record high. At the same time, the churn was reduced by 48 basis points, down to 17% at the end of the period. The ARPU showed a slight deceleration of 75 cents of a euro, mainly due to MTR regulatory impact and the football removal in Telecable. And finally, I would like to highlight the good evolution that RGU is demonstrating during the year, growing by more than 60K, of which more than 40,000 are mobile RGUs. Let's now move to slide 5. So before entering into the review of our operational and financial performance during the year, I'd like to recall the four pillars of our strategy in order to show how these strategic lines are driving the decisions we take every day within the group and will draw our path to the success of the coming years. First, we're firmly committed to serving our customers with the best experience, the best broadband experience based in our superior network running on DOCSIS 3.1 and complemented with the best Wi-Fi experience both at home, at workplace, and outdoor. The best TV experience supported by our 4K Android set-top box and the agreements we have been the first in signing with content leaders like Netflix or Amazon Prime Video. And the best mobile offer for families in our markets thanks to our competitive host agreement. All the previous improvements are clearly having an impact this year on the resilience of our customer base but also in the customer satisfaction NPS surveys we regularly conduct. Second, we know that one-third of our revenue comes from B2B customers, so we are also firmly committed to become the best partner for them through a unified commercial strategy, through the launch of new products and services around business digital transformation, and through the investment in people, talent, and skills in the organization. Third, we are transforming and simplifying our operating model, working on both our front-end and our back-end, as explained before, through the unification and digitalization of processes, therefore eliminating redundancies. As anticipated during our Investor Day back in 2017, our networks and platforms are converging, making its management far simpler, while standardizing and improving the service we deliver to our customers. I think one important example is that we have already seen year-to-date, I mean in 2018, a significant decrease of 17% in the number of calls handled by our contact centers. As the fourth cornerstone of our strategy, we have proven during 2018 that we are committed with a targeted and efficient expansion. The first steps given beyond our home territories have confirmed our technical and commercial capacity, and we are confident on the ability to accelerate and increase the ambition of this expansion, both in terms of areas to address and of achievable penetrations. Now, let's start in the following slide with a deep review of our operational and financial performance during the year. If you move to slide seven, starting with the operating review, I would like to give you some granularity on the growth in net adds achieved during the year. Analyzing the growth per quarter in the chart on the left, you can see that we've been able to grow in three out of the four quarters of the year. It should be highlighted that during the summer, we took the decision to remove Champions League content from our TV platform in Telecable to optimize content profitability, and therefore, we somehow expected to lose part of the customer base in that region. It is also true that competition peaked during Q3 as a consequence of the football war, which triggered unprecedented and unexpected discounts and promotions from our competitors. However, during the last quarter of the year, we were able to reverse this trend, and what is most important, we're maintaining and keeping that trend month after month. On the chart of the right, you can see how we were able to reach the mentioned growth in net adds. The new customers came mainly from new markets, primarily from Navarra, but were offset by the expected loss of customers in Telecable and slightly by a tougher competition, particularly during the summer. All in, our fixed residential subscriber grew slightly during the year. On page eight, we show the good performance in RGU evolution during the year, which is a result of our bundling and upselling strategy. Our 3P, 4P penetration remains in sector high levels, with a 69.7% of our subscribers being on 3P and 4P bundles. As a result, we ended the year reaching all-time high penetration levels in every single product category. Broadband subs as a percentage of total subs grew during the period to 86.4%, more than 140 basis points versus last year. The TV penetration also increased during 2018 to 72.4%, growing TV RGUs by around 25,000 up to 417,000. Think our advanced 4K Android set-top box that was launched during 2017 is definitely helping us make our TV offer more attractive. During 2018, we have improved our TV experience by integrating Netflix and Amazon Prime Video in our set-top box, and we are definitely seeing how it is evolving strongly in usage and in satisfaction. With regards to mobile, we added more than 43,000 lines in the year to reach 958,000 lines, moving mobile penetration amongst our fixed subscribers above an 81%. If we move to slide nine, in this slide I would like to point out that during the year, we have been able to maintain a stable our telecom ARPU while improving churn level. Regarding churn, on the left-hand side, we saw a reduction in three out of the four quarters of the year versus the previous year, which is a sign of the stickiness of our customer base. Just the summer season was tougher in terms of churn for the reasons I gave before around unprecedented promotions from some of our competitors. With regards to ARPU, as I have been sharing with you throughout the year, we have been impacted both by regulation and also by the elimination of football content from Telecable TV platform, which has been translated in an increase of profitability for the group. Despite that, telecom ARPU remains stable year on year. For 2019, we have already implemented tariff increases that should ensure a good evolution of the ARPU in the year. Turning to slide 10, let me now zoom into the four strategic pillars, and the first of which is to provide the best customer experience while maintaining our leadership in B2C, which stands for 67% of our total revenue. Referring to fixed broadband, during the year we have been working on network evolution through DOCSIS 3.1 implementation that is already finished, the CPE renewal plan, and the development of Wi-Fi mesh solutions within the home network. Wi-Fi experience is at the top of our priorities because we do know that it is a key satisfaction lever. Our field technicians are truly Wi-Fi advisors, promoting upsell and extra equipment when needed, which has proven to end in a 10% lower or less incident rate and 24% less technician visits being required. With regards to pay TV, we have assessed that those customers that are satisfied with the usability of our 4K set-top box show significantly lower churn than those who are not. Therefore, we're constantly looking for ways of improving our TV experience. Specifically in 2018, with the addition of Netflix and Amazon Prime to our platform, as well as new functionalities such as new recommendations or continue watching. On top of this, we're currently providing a wide range of add-ons to our customers, from unlimited data passes, security, premium content, and career billing, to premium maintenance service. All this ends up in a better perception of our three brands in terms of NPS, the Net Promoter Score, than those of our competitors, and that is what ensures customer loyalty and therefore less churn. Our brands are leaders in terms of preference and clearly more valued than others in key aspects such as customer care or technical support. Going to the next slide, I would like to share with you our first experience out of our traditional boundaries. We started our expansion plan with Navarra at the beginning of 2018, and we have met our target of gaining more than 4,000 new customers in the region. This means reaching in nine, so to say, equivalent months, penetrations of as much as 10% in some of the areas we have entered. In this first year of expansion, we have increased our previous footprint by more than 170,000 new homes. For 2019, we plan to gain new 30,000 customers through our entrance in Catalunya, through our agreement with RAC, in León, Cantabria, and La Rioja, as well as broadening our presence in Navarra. In terms of potential households, our agreement with Orange gives us access to more than 10 million homes across Spain. That means that once we prove to be successful in the coming months, we could easily increase our target of 90,000 new customers by 2022. On slide 12, I'd like to share my thoughts about the B2B segment. The business division stands for one-third of our total revenue, so it has been crucial to me since I arrived into the company to focus in this area where we have great opportunities, thanks to the strength of our brands compared to our competitors. Both large accounts and SMEs do appreciate and value the closeness and attention that our company offers them. 2018 has been the year in which we have finally changed the negative trends seen during the last years. As you can see in the different charts, in SOHO, we managed to improve churn and conversion levels. In SMEs, we gained new customers and large account revenue grew by more than 5%. Turning to slide number 13, let me give you a little bit more color on this. With regard to large accounts, we have developed during the year new strategic growth levers such as the hybrid cloud, Wi-Fi as a service, security, and IoT big data, all of them through the signature of deals with first-line partners. Thanks to a unified portfolio, our three brands, and the exchange of the best practices between the three territories, our top 20 accounts have been mostly renewed, and we foresee new deals jointly accounting for more than 20 million. Focusing on SMEs, we're continuously working in order to make our offer more capillar, leveraging on new accesses, particularly Orange, FTTH, and Neva, and new services. Product standardization is at our forefront because we know it is key to support customer growth. And last but not least, we're currently renewing our value proposition in SOHO using B2C offer as a starting point. We have recently launched Wi-Fi Pro in order to help SOHOs make their businesses more attractive and their customers more loyal. This gives SOHOs the possibility of owning their own Wi-Fi network for their business and an independent one for their customers with unlimited data access. Euskaltel Pro, the only one for SOHOs, includes this Wi-Fi Pro solution bundled with other SOHO-oriented advanced services like multi-SIM and online productivity tools. Now, I would like to give the word to Jonander for him to review the financial performance we had during 2018.
Okay, thank you, Patsy. I will start with the top-line evolution in the year on page 15. On the left-hand chart, on a pro forma basis, our revenue in the period reached 692 million euros, representing a decrease of 2.2% year over year. Regarding residential revenue, we have included in this slide a bridge that explains the fall in revenues of 3.5% versus the same period last year. As we have been explaining during the whole year, the main impact in this fall is a tougher comparison regarding the number of residential fixed customers due to the losses we experienced during 2017, hitting the top line negatively by circa 7 million euros. The confirmation of a change in trend this year, 2018, regarding net adds is not yet enough to offset the decrease we had a year ago. Besides, and despite having stabilized the telecom fixed residential ARPU in the year, this was totally offset by the impacts mentioned before. Regarding the elimination of part of the football content from our TV platform in Telecable and the regulation on mobile termination rates. And mobile-only revenue decreased as a consequence of our current focus on increasing further our convergent mobile penetration. On B2B revenue decreased slightly in the year, mainly due to the fall of SOHO revenue, which we are addressing as explained by Patxi before. We took just a large account and SME revenue, which account jointly for more than half of total B2B revenue, we managed to grow 3.5%, proving that the initiatives addressed to SMEs and the strategy alliance signed during the first quarter of the year with Microsoft are helping us to become a better prepared player in the B2B space. And finally, wholesale and other revenue grew mainly from the recognition of our accounts of IFRS 15, impacting positively by 1.5 million euros in the first quarter. Moving on to slide 16, we reach an EBITDA of 336.4 million euros in the year. On relative margins, the margin grew by 42 basis points year on year to 48.6%. During the year, we were able to realize significant synergies and additional cost efficiencies, which meant a reduction in commercial and overhead costs of 10.1 million euros. Direct costs in the year were significantly impacted by profit-neutral revenues, like the agreement signed with the Basque government at the beginning of the year. But if we were to eliminate this, direct costs would have evolved positively by 7.3 million euros, thanks mainly to an improvement in the conditions of the mobile host contracts and also to the removal of part of the football content in Telecable. All in all, we managed to reduce the cost base during the year by 11 million euros or 3% less than the previous year, on the back of efficient management of direct commercial and overhead costs. If we were to analyze the recurrent savings reached during the year, the figure amounted to more than 17 million euros. Also, this growth was offset by 6.5 million euros of increase in customer equipment related to the new business lines in large accounts, such as Office 365. The main example of that is the contract signed with the Basque government at the beginning of the year. However, this positive evolution in the cost base was not enough to offset the tougher comparison in residential revenue previously explained. On the next slide, number 17, we've highlighted a broader view of the impact of our simplification plan, which is transforming our business model focus on improving process efficiency and cost optimization. During this year, we have launched more than 100 different projects within two main streams of action. Platform integration, the network and system unification that will allow us to become more efficient and more agile. And digitalization to reduce manual operations and fostering digital interactions with our customer base. As a result of this plan, we have reduced the recurrent cost base, OPEX and CAPEX, by more than 18 million euros. During 2019, we will be embarked on the main workload related to the platform integration, especially regarding the CRM unification. Once this crucial step is finished by the beginning of the next year, we will be able to collect most of the fruits of the plan. And by 2022, we expect that the recurrent savings will be more than 43 million euros yearly over plus CAPEX. On page 18, you can find some charts that explain the evolution of our CAPEX and operating cash flow. Total CAPEX in the year amounted to 153.5 million euros or 22.2% of revenue, as expected and above the group's long-term guidance of 17% due to the expansion and integration plans we are developing during 2018 and we are continuing in 2019. CAPEX, excluding expansion and integration investments during the period, stood at 116.5 million euros or 16.8% of sales. We demonstrated once again our capability to keep the operative CAPEX under control, fulfilling at the same time our strategic objectives of serving our customers with a network ready for current and future excellence. We have almost finished the deployment of DOCSIS 3.1 in all our geographies, assuring in that way the long-term competitiveness of our brands. Additionally, we incurred as planned in 37 million euros in the year for integration and expansion plans, confirming the feasibility of our low CAPEX strategy in expansion. And regarding operating cash flow, we maintain the ability to reach almost 32% of operating cash flow over revenues, if we don't take into account the impact of the integration and expansion plan. As anticipated during our Investor Day back in November 2017, in 2018, the global operating cash flow stood at 26.4%. And during 2019, this figure will start improving, and by 2022 will reach 33% of total revenues. Lastly, I would like to finish on page 19, referring to our cash flow generation in the year. As I said before, operating cash flow calculated as EBITDA minus CAPEX in the period amounted to 182.9 million euros, which represents 26.4% margin over revenue. If we were to consider just our cash generation capacity excluding the expansion and integration plans, the margin would have being 31.8%. The free cash flow for equity grew by 24.3% in the year to reach 124 million euros or 17.9% of revenue, in line with our guidance of reaching a higher free cash flow than last year. This figure includes the impact of extraordinary items and costs related to the integration process. Excluding these payments, free cash flow margin would have reached 18.9% of revenue. And additionally, according to our sustainable shareholder remuneration policy, we distribute 100 of 2017 net income, which amount to 49.6 million euros. All in, the dividend yield calculated over the volume weight share price of 2018 reached 3.8%. Consequently, we have been able to reduce debt in 74.4 million euros in the year. That means a reduction of 4.6% to improve the leverage ratio down to 4.45 times EBITDA. And now Patxi will give you some color on the outlook expected for this year 2019, as well as further perspective on our midterm guidance.
Thank you, Jonander.
I would like to wrap up the presentation with a target we have set for 2019 and the coming years until 2022. Regarding revenue, we're confident we will grow the top line in 2019 by low single digit to take traction in the following years with a growing contribution of the B2B recovery and the expansion to new territories. And we're confident to reach 800 million euros of sales by 2022. EBITDA will grow by low to mid single digit in 2019 and progressively every year to reach 400 million euros by 2022, thanks to the positive impact of two tailwinds, the above mentioned growth in the top line, but also the reduction of costs expected thanks to the simplification plan that has already been reviewed, especially from 2020 and beyond. The operating cash flow will accelerate its growth when the main bulk of the simplification plan finishes this year. The earnings per share will continue growing clearly above 10%, allowing a DPS to grow by double digit. And following current policies, we would reach in 2022 a ratio of net debt to EBITDA below 3.5 times. Once we reach 4 times net debt to EBITDA, which will be by 2020, the board will be enabled to decide on the most appropriate way to continue with our sustainable shareholder remuneration. And just to close, I would say a lot has changed and evolved since our Investor Day a bit more than a year ago. We acknowledged that 2018 and 2019 would be transition years. We are already halfway. We're in the midst of our expansion and integration plans that will soon bear fruit. Meanwhile, we remain committed with a strong focus on long-term sustainability and shareholder value generation that makes today the core of the management focus. Thank you for your attention, and let's now switch to the Q&A.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Q&A session starts now. If you wish to ask a question, please press 0 and 1 on your telephone keypad. You can also send your question to the webcast platform. Question by phone will be answered first. Thank you. And we have our first question from Akhil Dattani from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for taking the questions. Can I maybe start with looking at the guidance, please? I guess I just wanted to understand how we should think about the revenue outlook for 2019. You've obviously guided for low single-digit growth, but that's obviously a pretty marked improvement versus the 2% decline in 2018 and Q4, where obviously you've seen a pretty meaningful drop in revenues as well. So could you just walk us through how you think about those drivers? Are all the segments likely to contribute, or there are specific areas where you think the growth is going to be more pronounced? And are there any particular contract wins in B2B or wholesale that might be worth calling out when we try and think about that? So that's the first question. And I guess linked to that, maybe if you could just quickly comment on, I guess Q4 was actually the worst quarter in terms of year-over-year trends in residential. So just have we reached the bottom there? The second one was on your EBITDA and cash flow guidance, just trying to understand what is the impact of IFRS 16 and what are you implicitly trying to tell us in terms of capital intensity when we think about the op cash flow guidance? So is CapEx to sales stable up or down? And then the final thing is just on broader strategy, I guess very much linked to what you just talked about at the very end of the presentation. We've obviously had Zegona looking to increase their stake and pushing for change in the company and how things are working. Kind of how are your conversations with them evolving at the moment? What is your understanding of what they want, and how does that fit into what you're doing strategically? Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you for the four questions. So let me start with the beginning, the guidance on 2019, the single-digit guidance. I think the main drivers, as I said, in terms of growth are going to come from the expansion, the 30,000 new customers that we expect to increase, and the B2B revenue growth coming mostly from large accounts and small and medium enterprise, but also the stabilization of Soho. And what I would say is regarding the business as usual, which is our current footprint, we expect a flattish trend in which we expect our customer base to remain stable. So the main growth will be coming from expansion and B2B. You mentioned regarding B2B another element, which is wholesale. Wholesale is another element that the way we see the market today, there are new trends in terms of the ability to open our network to provide services to other operators or third parties. It's a trend that is accelerating in the last months, and we are open to seek for some of these opportunities via collaboration with some of the other operators and partners. Regarding Q4, yes, it's been the worst quarter. We've had positive net adds, but it's the peak where we have suffered from the remaining of the competition impact in October that remains from the football wars and also the loss of customers from last year. I don't know, Yonander, if you want to comment on the EBITDA.
Yeah, trying to give more color in terms of the impact of IFRS 16. This year meant an increase of the total amount of assets and debt approximately on 75 million euros, and we are now including that at the start of 2019. Regarding the impact on our P&L, EBITDA should improve by approximately 10 million euros. Additionally, we would have more financial expenses around 2 million euros and consequently a slight negative impact in net income of 1 million euros. As you know, we have additionally an increase on depreciation figures. And this is the main impact that we have in terms of EBITDA. But it's true that when we are analyzing those impacts, we will try to isolate the impact of IFRS 16 in all the comparisons between 2019 and 2018.
Okay, I think there was a last part of your question regarding where's the situation in terms of a conversation with Zegona. So what we know about Zegona's plan is, or business plan, is limited to what has been made public in their relevant facts. These ideas or hints they've been sharing were not previously discussed at the board of directors, so it's hard for us to judge. What we can say is that the board did go through our strategic plan and an updated business plan for 2019 and 2022, including expansion, efficiencies, and new initiatives well in advance of Zegona's announcement. All these plans were reviewed and they were approved unanimously in the board with no opposition. So honestly, I'm looking forward to know more and to hear more about the detailed plans from Zegona in the board. I think we're always receptive and looking for good ideas and plans. Specifically regarding the current status of the engagement is Zegona, and I think this was also made public by in their relevant fact, Zegona's representative asked to be temporarily excused from participating in the board to avoid a conflict of interest, while they were previously in the pre-tender period and now until they complete the buying of shares they have announced. We have not received any update in that sense from Zegona. So I'm looking forward for Zegona's representative to join again the board when this period is over and again be able to work and discuss on the business plan that will always be of great interest to us.
So we have another question from Julio Arciniegas from RBC. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my question. In the IPO prospectus on the financial covenants information, basically it says that the company was allowed to have a leverage of 5.5 times for the next 18 months after doing an acquisition. In this case, it will be Telecable. And after these 18 months, it will go the covenant back to 4.5. These 18 months have already passed, so we are already back on 4.5 leverage covenant. And seeing your adjusted EBITDA, the company will be reaching this covenant, and even very near reaching the covenant, including the unrealized synergies. Can you please clarify if the company is near to breaching the financial covenant? And also, can you tell us when the next revision of the covenant is going to take place? Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, it's true. This is the covenant that is including the financial facilities. The maturity of those 18 months are on February, but as you know, we have to declare the situation of the leverage each finish the finish of each half. We have announced to the lenders the situation at the end of December, and the next declaration will be at the end of June. In that sense, we haven't concerns about the situation on that. No, it's something that is under control.
Yeah. If I might follow up, can you give us more color of what is the situation? Because if I see EBITDA, actually EBITDA is declining, no? And if I have in mind that, for example, you have paid dividends in January, I see quite difficult that actually you are going to meet a covenant. So what sort of situation it was discussed? If it's possible, if you could give us some color.
That I don't understand exactly where is the difficulty, because as I said, we have announced and made the calculation of the covenant. The covenant includes some synergies. We announced synergies on total amount on Telecable of 15. Millions, half on 2018 and half on 2018, and we are considering this situation. At the end of 2019, we don't have any additional gap on that. It's going to include in the EBITDA of the end of 2019 the total synergies announced. But with the calendar that we have, including the payments of the dividends, etc., all the time we are below this level of 4.5 times.
Yeah, I think something that is related, which is not exactly your question, which is the remuneration of the shareholder. One of the things that we are doing this year is we're sticking to our double-digit growth guidance. The reality, there was another element. Last year we distributed 100% of the net income. The reality is that this year it's been, it's
88%.
Which? The payout is...
This year it's going 88%.
So it's 88%. So we're sticking to the 10% commitment, but we are aware of the need to be at the same time balancing the debt situation. So, and I think this is going to be accelerating in the coming quarter. So we're not concerned today about that.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So we have another question from Ivan Lille from BBVA. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, good afternoon, everyone. Just maybe three questions for me. The first one is, when you look at your net add figures for January and February, does that comply with the guidance you just gave for 2018, which was flattish subs in current regions and plus 30,000 in new regions? That's the first one. The second one is, Telco ARPU is flat, basically flat in 2018. If I recall correctly, there were some price increases last year. So What was going to make that telco ARPU is going to grow a bit this year versus flat last year? And maybe the last one, I missed a bit. I don't know if you explained. What was the reason for that -4% in B2B in the fourth quarter when it was flat in the first 9 months?
Sorry, can you repeat the last question on B2B?
The last question, if I worked my numbers properly, I think the fourth quarter was -4.6% revenue when it was basically flat on B2B in the first 9 months. I don't know what was the reason for that.
Okay. Q4. Okay. So let me give you some background. Although we're in the middle of February, and it's a bit early to advance numbers on Q1. But I think, so my feeling around Q1 numbers is that what we will see during Q1 is there are two things that are going to influence those numbers. We expect positive net adds in the quarter. January was already slightly positive. I think February is going to be going in the same direction, so slightly positive, and I'm talking about the total. I think this is good news considering that it is now that customers are seeing the impact of our price increase. So we've increased on average between 3 and 5 euros our tariffs. It's basically 1 euro mobile, 1 euro fixed line, and 1 euro broadband. And you know that it's normally in the period where customers are hit by the increase that there seems to be a higher pressure on churn. So the good news is that in that environment, my view is that Q1 will be positive. I think a lot of the impact in terms of new boost, in terms of expansion, like we said, it's going to be during the month of March and April that we will start to see the additions of the RAC Catalunya new customers, of the León new customers, of La Rioja, and of Cantabria customers. So it's going to be in Q2 that we will see the boost in terms of net adds coming from expansion. So all up, I think we are confident for the year. Q1 will be positive, and it will be a balance between the two trends that I'm mentioning. So the real ramp up should come from March and April. Then regarding your second question regarding the telco ARPU, I think what you can expect is in the first weeks, I just mentioned the tariff increases. So I think despite the fact that the competitive promotions, particularly from Vodafone, seem to remain intense, we're going to see a price boost or an increase in terms of the ARPU in this beginning of the year that I think is going to help us with the evolution during 2019. There's obviously, there might be some negative impacts due to regulation, but I'm counting on the ARPU net of regulation impact. There's a few things that should help us. ARPU is not just about price increases. We do price increases, and then it's important to look at the promotional activity from competitors to sustain that price increase. And I think the feedback that we are hearing from most of the market seems that there will be a more rational approach. But there is another thing, which is another element on which we count to drive ARPU, sustain and drive ARPU growth, which is attaching services that the customer values. I did mention during my previous presentation some of the elements like security, some of the elements like attaching the OTT premium services. So we're focusing on the development of further attach opportunities on services, products, and billing of third-party products that will also have a hit on ARPU. That means that we remain confident that ARPU will be sustained, slightly growing. Another thing which is, and again, ARPU is a mix of many elements. Another thing that I think is good news is that the first results that we have seen in our expansion in Navarra is showing that the average ARPU we get from new customers in Navarra is in line with the ones that we have in our current regions, whilst initially we thought it was going to be 4 to 5 euros lower. So we remain confident. You know that ARPU is a mix of many, the ARPU you see that is consolidated is a mix of expansion and many, many other areas, but we remain confident we will have the tools to keep and slightly grow ARPU during the year.
Okay,
sorry, I don't know if there was, yeah, there was a last one regarding B2B, and I think you mentioned a decrease during Q4. I think what we're seeing in Q4 and in Q1 is a solid trend. What I think we're going to see is a solid trend in terms of SMEs. SMEs, we're back on growing in number of customers SMEs in SME, which was something that didn't happen for 4 or 5 years, and that's a very good and strong sign. We will, a lot of the impact on the total business side was driven by SOHO. So now we are commercializing the new automated packages for SOHO that are going to drive the difference throughout the year, and we remain confident that we will end the year on positive net adds in SOHO. And obviously, large accounts, I've mentioned, there's a solid evolution. Q1, we will see a sustained or growing business. There's a strong pipeline that will be showing in terms of impact in the coming quarters or months.
Are you also targeting the SOHOs and SMEs in the new regions, or is it just residential?
Yeah, the new regions is both residential and SOHO. It's both of them.
Okay, thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So we have another question from Nuno Matias from Haitong Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for the questions. The first is in this issue that you have touched on the new regions regarding their ARPU. Can you give us also a little bit more color on the type of customer on Navarra? Is this 3P customers, 4P customers? Also there, I know it's early days, but can you give us an idea of the type of margin that you've been able to achieve in Navarra? And secondly, there is an information in one of your slides, slide 10, I believe, where you mentioned that 25% of your base have already moved to a 4K set-top box. I'm just trying to understand if this is through the normal rotation of the customers, so new customers coming in are provided with these new boxes, or are you pushing to deploy these new boxes and in some way subsidizing this technology? Thank you.
Sorry. Okay. So regarding the new regions, I think one thing that is important to understand, and it's the way we approach expansion. We're not expanding. So we're expanding. We have to remember that our positioning as a company is a company that is, and again, when you compare us with some of our competitors, we're a company that is strongly convergent, which is driving the performance in terms of EBITDA and everything. And the way we're approaching the new regions is focusing on convergent offer. We're not looking for mobile only and other things that could imply short-term growth, but not a real long-term sustainability. We did look at the opportunities, but we discarded them. So the kind of packages that we're offering rely on what is our strength today, which is products like the family pack, where we're able to offer a solid offer for the whole of the family, including TV, broadband, 2 to 3 mobiles, for a price that is particularly attractive, that usually sits slightly at or below Vodafone and Orange's prices. That's the core of our competitive advantage in terms of what we have seen in terms of the offers. So far, what we've seen in Navarra is that this positioning is compelling. We have seen that the penetration that we are reaching in some of these areas is at or above the levels that we expected. So we're reaching a good levels of penetration. And as I said, we're seeing that on average the ARPU is sustainable and is in line with our expectation. So that is the kind of profile of customer that we will be seeking throughout that expansion. I've talked about Navarra, but that's the positioning that we will keep in Catalonia and the rest of the region. So we'll be getting new data every quarter regarding the confirmation that that positioning does work. Margins in expansion are around 40% margin. And then you finally talked about the 25% set-top box installed base. I think it's a combination of different elements. The new customers, we go for the new set-top box. In fact, for example, when it's when we are doing expansion in new regions, we have the full new set-top box, a new modern CPE device that ensures Wi-Fi quality, Wi-Fi audit in the home, so that we ensure that when we leave the home, every single room in the home is left with a perfect Wi-Fi delivery. In the last months, we've done over 100,000 audits in the home to check and validate and correct and make sure that the Wi-Fi service is of high quality. So it's a mix of new customers. We're also getting a lot of hype from some of the existing customers to upgrade to the new set-top box. When these customers are high-value customers, we do an upgrade to them. And that there's a third option that is available to customers, which is they can subscribe for a monthly fee the move to the new 4K set-top box.
Okay, very clear. Thanks, guys.
So we have another question from Giovanni Montalti from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hello, hi. Thanks for the question. I have a few quick follow-up. One on the CapEx to sales. I'm not sure, but I didn't get your answer to a previous question. If you can give us a broad idea, if you can, about the outlook. The second on the guidance, I may have missed some of the documents you have published, but in the slides I see some ranges in terms of growth. You have given us some absolute numbers in terms of revenues and EBITDA. How should we read these absolute numbers? Is this the high end? Is this the low end? Is this the midpoint? Thank you.
Thank you, Yonander. I don't know if you want to cover the CapEx to sell. I don't know if it was a matter of the script or can you remind the CapEx that we expect for this year, which is 22, and how in the coming years it will go back?
No, we keep the announcement that we made in the Investor Day at the end of 2017. The idea was to be in this level around 21-22% of CapEx during 2018 and 2019, and we keep this guidance for this year. And the idea is to and then recuperate and try to reduce at those levels around 17% during the next year. The peak is clearly in during the last year and this current year. And then we are recuperating and recover this level of 70% in 2020-21.
Yeah, maybe in the script we were not clear enough, but I think the answer should be clear now. And regarding guidance, I would say it's mid-range. There are elements that I've mentioned, like the numbers in terms of 90,000 new customers are based on the projects we have today in our hands that are confirmed today, beginning of 2019. We're still exploring new opportunities. So new opportunities could mean additional opportunities, but so far we are committing to what we know today. I also said that potentially we could explore at some point some other revenue sources that are popping up in the market, like being more open in terms of providing services to other telco operators and so on. I think it's something that could be an opportunity. These are not included in the current business plan. So I would consider it like mid-range.
Okay, thank you. And sorry, if I may, again, just to clarify, I guess these absolute numbers are factoring in the new accounting standard, I guess, being for 2022.
IFRS 16, you said, Giovanni?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the
800 and the 400.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, the idea, in these figures, we reinforce the idea of the 800 in terms of revenues and 400 in terms of EBITDA. But the main impact in terms of new accounting rules is going to be appreciated this year, and we are reducing those impacts during the next years in terms of EBITDA, and when we are speaking about those figures at the end of the business plan, it's considering not impact of those new accounting rules.
Well, it will be done with the new accounting rules,
yeah.
But the impact will be limited.
Yeah.
Okay, so these numbers do not reflect the new accounting rules?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, if I may,
they include the new accounting rules.
No, but we are not considering the impact of IFRS 16 to calculate those 400 million euros on EBITDA in 2022. It's clear?
To me, as far as I understand, this reflects the new accounting standard. Is it correct?
When we are announcing and comparing which is the situation at the end of 2022, is in comparison with the same rules and the same position that we had in 2018. In that sense, if we are not considering in 2018 the IFRS 16, we are not considering this effect in 2022.
So this guidance is subject to adjustment stemming from the new accounting standard.
Yeah.
Okay, clear. If I may, again, apologies for being long, but following up to a previous questions about the debt covenant, so as far as I understood, you are relaxed about this. You have the next, deadline to verify where you are versus the covenant in June. And again, I understand that you are relaxed about this. But let's assume that things do not move in the right direction. Can you remind us what would be the consequences, what would be the mechanism that a breach of the covenants would trigger, and how would you assess your priorities in that scenario?
No, it's not an automatism that could provoke, closing of all the financial facility. It's something that we create in that moment to control the level of debt that could be, or the level of leverage that could be managed in the company. The most relevant could be to increase a little bit the cost of the margin above Euribor that we have to pay. But as I said before, it's something that was a frame that we defined in this financial facility. It's not an element that could provoke automatically a change, but it's true that could have some impact of 15 or 20 basis points of increase in terms of total cost, and not in all the tranches, only in the bank tranches, but we are going to announce in the next days which is the current situation of the financial facilities and which is the current view of this total sources that we are using. But it's not anything that is relevant. It is not a red flag. It's only something that was included in the financial facility to control a little bit the situation of the company and the need to ask some waiver for the banks if we could make an increase in terms of leverage.
Okay, but in your negotiations, in your discussions with the banks, would you be ready to reduce your dividend policy to minimize pressure on your cost of funding?
Yes, till now we are presenting our business plans, our cash flows statements for next year, considering the current distribution policy. If the board of directors could see that this distribution policy could put in risk the evolution of the leverage of the company, obviously I think that they are going to consider, but in that moment with the figures and the plans that we have designed for the next 4 years, we can keep the current retribution policy and we can keep at the same time the idea to deleverage the company and be at the end of 2022 close to 3.4 or 3.5 times.
Yeah, I think there's a level of adjustment that we will keep and we will sustain our remuneration policy, but there's always a level of freedom and adjustment that we could use in case things would get worse, which is not the case that we are expecting today at all.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay, so...
So we have no further questions, sir.
So basically, and just to close, I would like to thank you all again for the attention this afternoon. I think we are excited to continue delivering on our expansion and integration plans during this year, 2019. We'll keep on working to remain as leaders in our traditional markets, but you're seeing that we are doing our best to become and accelerate becoming a relevant player in new regions that we're entering right now. And all this, what I think is important, is without losing the focus on our main goal, which is keeping a solid cash generation to maximize the value we're offering to our shareholders. So thank you, everyone, and have a good day.
This now concludes the conference call. Thank you all for attending. You may now disconnect your line.